स्वात्मीभावाद्य रद्ध्यानाद् यया बन्धा विपायया अहं त्वम् इत्यथार्थाध्ये अज्ञानात् पुरुषस्य हि स्वाप्नेवाभात्यथाध्यानात् यया बन्धा विपायया intelligence, ajñānāt, from ignorance, purushasya, of a person, he certainly, svapni, a dream, eva, like, abhāti, appears, atat jñānāt, from the bodily concept of life, Yaya, by which bandha, bondage, viparyaya, and misery. Translation. Misidentification of oneself and others as I and you on the basis of the bodily concept of life is a product of ignorance. This bodily concept is the cause of repeated birth and death, and it makes us go on continuously in material existence. Purport. The concept of I and you, aham tvam, as separated from each other, is due to our forgetfulness of our eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Person Krishna is the central point, and all of us are his parts and parcels, just as hands and legs are parts and parcels of the whole body. When we actually come to this understanding of being eternally related to the Supreme Lord, this distinction, which is based on the bodily concept of life, cannot exist. The same example can be cited herewith. The hand is the hand and the leg is the leg, but when both of them engage in service of the whole body, there's no such distinction as hands and legs. For all of them belong to the whole body, and all the parts working together constitute the whole body. Similarly, when the living entities are in Krishna consciousness, there is no distinction as I and you, because everyone is engaged in the service of the Lord. Since the Lord is absolute, the services are also absolute. Even though the hand is working one way and the leg is working in another way, Since the purpose is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they are all one. This is not to be confused with the statement by the Mayavadi philosopher that everything is one. Real knowledge is that hand is hand, leg is leg, body is body, and yet altogether they are one. As soon as the living entity thinks that he is independent, his conditional material existence begins. The conception of independent existence is therefore like a dream. One has to be in Krishna consciousness, his original position. Then it can be freed from material bondage. So now we're bringing this direction that was being given before now a step further. Same principle, same basis, but still there something more is being addressed, or the focus is more. That before is that as a devotee there's no need to be upset about all these things, because ultimately Dhruva Maharaj's brother died. That was the time he was supposed to die anyway. So the instrument may have been the yakshas, but the yakshas aren't actually the one doing these things. So the devotee then, seeing with this kind of vision, then he doesn't become disturbed. So the qualities of culture, the qualities of interaction, these are then being brought forward. Now here we see is this element being emphasized on the Lord's not being, the living entity not being involved in this, because there's actually no difference in the living entities at the same time as there is. So this point that Prabhupada is bringing out, the hand is the hand, the leg is the leg, but they're all part of the body. They all work together for the same purpose. So there's a difference, but there's a non-difference. So this concept, the other one is, okay, he's who he is, I'm who I am, but the Lord is the controller here. So I don't get disturbed by his action because he's only an instrument. Now we're taking it a step further in that line of thought that actually there's non-difference in the living entity. So why would I think of them as you? Because we have to understand the material world, this I and you, then means I am the controller and am independent from the Lord, and you as a controller are independent from the Lord. But because there's a competition, I want to be the superior controller. So that concept of I and you in the material world is based on the concept of independence from the Supreme Lord. So here we're removing that. So it leaves that there is an individual, but at the same time that individuality is based on their connection with the Lord. And in that way, you're all part of one element, one aspect. You're all part of the Lord. Right? So this then becomes, very important element, because then one sees that there's no such thing as I and you, or I and mine, because it's all Krishna's, and we all are connected to Krishna. So it's a very, very fine point, very important point. Is that because otherwise we'll say, oh, these kind of people are like this and that kind of person is like that. And so if we're talking about the actual individual, that means we're seeing things in the mode of passion. So we actually think souls are different. Mode of goodness means you understand the souls are non-different. They have the same quality. Right? They're differently situated. So in this way, and they're conscious. So that way they're an individual. But they're only an individual in the context of being a particular aspect of the complete whole. At the same time, is also on this Mayavad concept, is that even though everybody is part and parcel of the Lord and part of that Supreme Whole, the Supreme Whole is still complete on himself, independently from all his parts and parcels. So these are important elements for eradicating from any angle the concept of enmity or anger towards any living entity. So one can have all kinds of ideas and plans how one's going to do it on the emotional platform or by some material arrangement. One can try, but then one has to go to use the points that Swayambhuva Manu used, right? Working within the element of the emotions and the situation, but it still has to be seen in connection with the Lord. So we see the key is, if it's not connected to the Lord, it won't work. People will have an idea that it will, but it never has and never will. Right? So this becomes very important, that this kind of understanding is a way of seeing, a way of perceiving. If you're so absorbed in the holy name and the taste of the holy name, and you deal with everyone very nicely, you don't worry about this point. But you might find it very useful to preaching to others who don't have that taste. But if you don't have that taste, this is a very, very important tool. Right? Remember, here we're on a fourth canto. So we're 40% of the way to the tenth canto. Right? So tenth canto means you're self-realized. So we're at 40% now. So this is something important. So if you feel you're below this, it's important. If you're above this, don't worry about it. Right? But whatever's above includes what's below. So that oneness that is there in a relationship, that friendship that you have with someone, whatever the relationship, that oneness, that's because of the connection with the Lord. That the quality you're experiencing that, these is coming from the Lord. So those qualities being appreciated, then one feels that oneness. But at the same time, it's individuals appreciating the oneness. But that individuality doesn't include being separate from the Lord. So these become very important elements. We'll hear these and yes and this and that, and then we'll use other perspectives in our life. But the point is this is the perspective. This is the perspective to see who we are, what we're situated. This is the actual full platform as the Sambandha Gyan, on just who we are as souls. Then as an individual who has desires and all that, then we take it to, therefore connecting that also to Krishna, then that relationship with Krishna, how would we deal with Krishna's creation because it's him? And then to the point of his pastime. So it's all part of one process, right? If all this is seen as there's no difference, then also all these processes, there's no difference, right? The holy name is emphasized because that is the most essential point. That's what's going to last eternally, right? Here it becomes an endeavor because we're looking at ourselves as individuals on the material platform. We have to see ourselves within the spiritual context. Right? So in either case, the holy name is the prominent element. That's the process of purification here, and that's the process of tasting, expressing love of Godhead. So that doesn't change, but the perception of our oneness here and to the oneness there, that has to be put into place. So very important. This is not just something that it's just, okay, it happens to be here today and we're supposed to be a class, so that's why we're here, and then this is what we're listening today. Tomorrow it'll be something else. Right? No, it's supposed to be that this is what we're supposed to use in our life. Because if one does, where's the difference? Where's the problem? Right? Just as profit's in the difference, problem's in the difference. Right? Why is there profit in the difference? Because you remove the problem. Right? But if you understand this, there is no difference. So then already one is situated on the transcendental platform. Okay. So, yes.
about the bodily concepts of life, and as you framed it as a defined point. So can you explain more about how such a fundamental point can be such a fine point?
Okay, yeah. So we're always thinking that Prabhupada's just saying you're not the body in the beginning point, so let's get on to something more advanced. But we're not the body includes all these elements. That the point is okay, we're not the body, that means, okay, we as a soul are different from matter. We're a different manifestation of Brahman. Right? So the material energy is inferior Brahman. We're superior Brahman, but we're not the most superior, right? We have two other Brahmans above us. Right? So we have to kind of know the pecking order here. Right? You know, and generally we do. We peck on the material energy, right? But unfortunately, being a shadow, it doesn't really give anything for sub, it doesn't give any substance, because we are not shadow. So then, that element there, taking it there, then you're looking at, well, how does it work? Because even, see, the thing is, even we get rid of the bodily concept, then we adjust on the body, the mind, and words. But then what's left? What's the fourth level of false ego? That's the consciousness. So we've removed the bodily consciousness, which removes the false ego. They go together as the elements. So the five Mahabhutas and the false ego. So those six go together. The intelligence and the senses, that goes together. Then the mind itself, that's on its own. But it controls all the others. Then there's still polluted consciousness. So one can get rid of these other four and be nicely situated. Like, on the, you know, probably if you go to the, you know, Mahajana Tapalokas, they're situated like that. Because they're not thinking, you know, sense gratification is my drive. Right? So that detachment, that renunciation is there. But it still leaves the concept, I'm the controller and enjoyer. So you see the Bhagavatam, though using the, you know, pointing it out through, we're not the body, but they're pointing out, we're not the body on I'm the controller and the enjoyer, and this body is my medium for controlling and enjoying. So even if I'm not the body, it still doesn't mean I won't use it for that purpose. Like, you know, the cook, you know, may understand I'm not the knife, I'm not the pot, I'm not the spoon, but it still doesn't mean he's not cooking for his own purpose, his own material purpose. Right? So, but he will be better at cooking because he understands, he can clearly see without attachment the nature of the pot and what it can do, the nature of the spoon, what it can do, you know, the nature of the fire. So he doesn't burn things because he knows the nature of fire. He knows what the pot can handle. He knows what the spoon can do, right? He knows the nature of the vegetables or whatever he's cooking. So in that detached position, he will actually be better at that manipulating the material energy than one who's attached. This is the fun part, right? Can I say? Yeah. It's just the way energy works. You go after it, it goes away. You move away, it comes after you. So it's just, that's life, you know. We are under illusion, we'll go after it, we'll catch it. No, it won't happen. Like that. So that platform, so we see the Bhagavatam is then addressing that fourth level, which is the most essential, because if you catch that, the other three are brought into line. Because, so the slower path will be to work on these other three, and then come up with plans to correct problems in these three through manipulating these three, right? That's what we mean by, you know, morality and justice and prayaschitta and all these things basically are useless because they can't adjust themselves to correct the real problem. If we think that working that material justice and morality is important, then yes, you make an adjustment within it, because then you're acting according to the operational cause, and that will have influence on the material energy, which then will transform into what you are looking for. But the point the Bhagavatam is making, you can transform the material energy however you like, it still has no substance. Therefore, we see is he's done such, you know, on one level, very strong action. But no one here is blaming him for the action. They're simply thinking that the consciousness is wrong. You adjust the consciousness, then everything comes into proper balance. But this adjustment of consciousness isn't stopping action. It's actually a positive form. Right? So it means if you can't do this, okay, then, and they're very stubborn, okay, then you use all these very peaceful, quiet, make everything very nice so that one doesn't do anything bad. But the point is the consciousness is still bad. So here then you change the consciousness, automatically it changes the foundation of the mind's acceptance and rejection, the intelligence application of the senses, the false ego, you know, the body, you know, its engagement. So, but it still takes practice. So the difficulty is that consciousness has changed, but it needs the practice. So in that practice process, one may do something wrong, right? Because that's the meaning of practice, is that practice means you're not doing it right. So you practice until you get it right. So now if in the process of practicing, one does something wrong, the solution is still what will make the consciousness better to make the practice go better, not how to stop them from practicing because they're making a mess of the practice. You know, the kid stood up, fell over on their face, so we should arrange it such that the kid can't stand up. That would solve the problem of them falling on their face. You understand? So, and it's not any more adult or mature when we throw the same principle into a committee. Right? You know what I'm saying? Just because we've added 40 or 50 or 60 years onto it doesn't make it any less infantile. So it's only false ego that we think it is. So here we're dealing with very big, mature people. They've been around a while. Right? You know, these are all actually who's speaking, brothers of Lord Shiva. Right, so they're all sons of Brahma. And so then, yeah, so this level of perception is what makes everything work nicely. Someone's on the level of consciousness that's lower, therefore these persons will deal with them on that platform. Because that's how they see. They won't see them higher. But for those who are committed to this higher vision, then bringing that out, that's what's done. But means Dhruva Maharaj has been on that platform. Somehow or another, now he's not working on this platform. So you bring him back to that platform. But let's say like Narad Muni, Ravana bumped into Narad Muni one day. And then Narad Muni, I think, made some comments on his activities. Ravana didn't appreciate it. So he pulled out his sword and tried to, you know, cut Narad Muni into pieces. But the sword, you just go through him and no effect, because you know, and then he was bewildered. What's happening? He says, I got a spiritual body. He says, you can do that all day. It won't affect me because, you know, I'm not affected by matter. He says, but because you thought I was made of matter and you would have an effect on me by using your sword against me, therefore you will be punished on this material platform. And so then one of his, you know, hundreds of curses was given by Narad Muni.
Yes. Elaborately explained something that Prabhupada said in my initiation.
Oh.
It's in a very dramatic but simple way, and you just explained it. He said, Prabhupada compared all of the processes of purification to a silversmith's hammer. And then he said,
but with bhakti yoga, one stroke.
Yes.
He brought it right to bhakti.
Yes.
Could you explain how that works?
Yes. Yes. Because the metaphysical means the bhakti is the only important element, actually, because it includes everything. And within that, there'll be these other forms that's automatically included. It means just like a parent's affection for the child. Why? It means, and it's working nicely, it's very full, it's very intense. They're very, you know, satisfied with it. What elements are there? There has to be an element of oneness, that there's a non-difference, but at the same time there has to be an element of their individuals within this oneness. That's why it's working. And so they simply brought it closer to how Krishna likes people to act. Right? You get good results because either the action or the mentality is more in line with how someone should act within devotional service. But you don't acknowledge the devotional service, so you don't get any devotional benefit. Right? So dealing with the indirect, if you deal with it how Krishna would deal with it, you know, through the Shastra or through somehow another habit of previous lives of Shastras, so this life, even though you don't know the Shastra, you're still by habit acting in a pious way. You know, or you have a good mentality, though maybe you're not, you know, so expert. You know, you have the guy that's very expert, he gets the results. Or you have the guy that's just a real nice guy, doesn't really get, you know, results, but he has good relationships. So something is there. But when it's recognized, that process, that's when it starts a devotional process. Right? But you can recognize the metaphysics of it and not the devotion, and you'll still get liberated. So metaphysics will liberate you, but won't give you devotion. But if the metaphysics are connected to Krishna, then it becomes devotion. So this is karma yoga means my endeavors are connected to Krishna. Jnana yoga means that understanding the metaphysics is connected to Krishna. But still, it's connected. Without the connection, yes, it's useless. But just because if it's not connected, it's useless, doesn't mean if you connect it, it's not useful. That's the mistake devotees will make. Oh, Prabhupada said it's useless, so throw it out. No, but in this way, he's also said, you know, eating food that's not cooked in proper consciousness is also, you know, useless. And, you know, everything else, you know, was your clothes made in proper consciousness? You know, is that, you know, so where does it end? You're going to end up with nothing, you know. Is that okay? Okay. Something else? Yes.
So someone may know they're not the body and still have polluted consciousness, or were you saying
someone may realize they're not the body and have polluted consciousness?
Both. Means you've heard about it. So any devotee has heard about it. So if you ask any devotee anywhere, are you this body? They'll say no. But then you have the element of action. So you can know you're not the body, you can realize you're not the body, and then you can connect I'm not the body to I'm servant of Krishna. Right? And even within servant, you can know, you can realize. You know, so realize means then you're going to act upon it. So that's the element, is that you have the physical, you have the metaphysical, and you have the spiritual. So generally devotees deal with the physical and the spiritual, not so much with the metaphysical. But the point is it's the bridge between the two. In other words, if you can absorb yourself in direct devotional activities, then that's always naturally the best. But much of our activities aren't necessarily directly involved. If you're working purely in the Bhagavad, then there'll be no consideration of I and mine. You don't need anything. You just, whatever Krishna provides, that's what you do, and you simply, you know, chant, dance, and take prasad, right? So then, if that's not fully absorbing, then the pancharatrik system will regulate your life so that even indirect elements are automatically connected to the direct through the deity worship. Once getting up in the morning, cleaning the floor, taking a bath, going to the temple, all these things are in, even though they're indirect, they're connected to the deity worship. So they come in line with this. So then if one's living that lifestyle and that's all one's absorbed in, you know, preaching and deity worship, temple program, everything like that, then also there's not a whole lot of indirect that you have to worry about. A little here and there, but not much. But now if one has the elements within, you know, one's family life and economics, sense gratification, the desire to be free from the anxiety, the material entanglement, all these elements, then that's your indirect. And so then if one needs to regulate it through the Vedic system, but more important, we see, is to change the consciousness on looking at it. So we've looked at it, and we may be willing to change it from impious to pious. It means it's according to directions that Krishna would better appreciate, right? Because what you're dealing with is him anyway, so he'd rather be dealt with how he prefers than how he'd not. So one may be inclined towards that. But even if one is, there's still the element of, well, how does it connect the consciousness? Right? How is that connected? What's the mechanics of it? And so if it's nice, if one sees it just nicely connected to Krishna, it's always like that, great. Just like the person comes into Krishna consciousness and, you know, they have facility, they have money, so they're giving money to the temple, and whenever they can, they come to the temple and all that. And they're very enthusiastic, right? That freshness, that newness. So for them, the mechanics isn't so important because their whole thing is just, you know, finish up at the office and then they can get to the temple. You know, they can take the weekend is here, now we can all go to the temple. And we have some extra money, hey, we'll use that for the temple. And, you know, so like this, it's all going on. But now, with time, if someone can maintain that their whole life, great. But we generally see as there comes a point where that's not, that same enthusiasm's not there. So then their consciousness tends to go back towards those things that situated them where they are anyway. You know, why are they in family life? Because of that interaction and all these different things. And so then at that point, if you don't know the metaphysics, what's going to connect it? Because the metaphysics connects anything, because it's describing how Krishna's entered into everything and how the mechanics of everything, no matter what you're doing, is still based on Krishna and his potencies. So seeing that, then one can, it becomes, it becomes very practical. But it has to be seen that this is practical, because otherwise devotees will say, oh, that's all nice theory. But it's not. It's simply the science of what's actually going on. So then by understanding that, then it gives that, you know, final, like, support. So we can say intellectually it's higher, but technically it's in between. Because you have material endeavor, then the metaphysics, and then the spiritual endeavor, the spiritual engagement. So one can technically just switch from one to the other and be fully absorbed. And if one does that, that's more recommended. But if one doesn't, then you have this process, you can engage the metaphysical to see that there's nothing in one's life that actually distracts one from Krishna. It does. Does that make sense? Okay. I don't know if that answers the question.
Well, one thought came is, it seems most of us don't think about realizing we're not the body. We just think about engaging in devotional service, and if we, on the way, happen to realize we're not the body, all the better, and if we don't, our goal is to love Krishna. So maybe you could... Is that a proper misunderstanding?
No, it's not a misunderstanding. It's a matter of if someone can keep focused like that, like I said. But look around the lecture. There you have 1,500 examples of what I'm talking about. Okay, remove 30. Remove, what's his name? The painter? Pushkar, right? You know, so, like that. So here's someone who they were acting like that when they were in their 20s and 30s and possibly into their 40s. And now in their 50s and 60s, I don't see it. Maybe it's starting to re-come back again. But there was a serious gap right in their maturity. So what happened? Because they didn't understand the metaphysics. So that's what I'm saying. If you can keep that up the whole time, that's glorious. I probably just thought, beginning, everyone will just chant 64 rounds, do Hari Nam all day, take Prasad, and we won't do anything else. He wasn't even going to worry so much about deity worship or anything like that. Then it did, so then he started regulating. Before, they go out Hari Nam all night, get up in the morning, do this and that, and then when that whole Mayavad thing came up in New Vrindavan, then he introduced the full Pancharatrik morning program. Otherwise, before that, it was just Hari Nam. So In other words, you introduce these things as they're necessary. The Bhagavat's complete in the self, but because of our conditioning, then we may need the Pancharatra as a safety net. And then below that, more desire than the Vedic. Like that. So that's the idea, is that if you're conscious of it, that's why Ishupanishad says vidyam cha, that you should know both ignorance and knowledge together. Otherwise, you may be focused on Krishna, but the one that knocked you out, you didn't see coming. And that was where we did think we were the body. Right? You understand? So it's not a separate that the consciousness becomes focused over onto this, and that's all. What we're saying is that in looking at the devotional perspective, one can see all these things in connection to Krishna. That's the secret, is that there's still that individual consciousness in that oneness. So the materialists, the karmis and jnanis can't understand this. So that's what the devotee is able to appreciate. So they're able to, so these elements then remove, you know, if there's any problems in fighting and all these different things, differences of opinion, this solves that. Because then you'll be able to work in such a way that it will be worked out, because Krishna is what you're trying to obtain. So our own conditioned nature, we're trying to engage, but it shouldn't get in the way of the result for Krishna. Like that. So if one can see through that, then it's able to correct that weakness. Does that make sense? Right? So the focus is still purely on the holy name in that, because that's what we're trying to get to. So the process is there, the goal is there. So this is a process, not a goal. But the holy name is both. You know, so it's different. But it's such that they can go on simultaneously. Does that make sense? So that's why it's in the context of relationship here. It's being applied in a practical thing at the same time as that metaphysical perspective is being given. Because the Upanishads will simply give the metaphysical perspective. You have to apply it into the practical. Right? But the Puranas, then, they give it in a practical, practically applied way. Does that make sense? You know, here you have progenitor of mankind, you have the treasure of the universe, and you have the king of the universe. Right? So all pretty involved, materially, people. Right? It's not like Narad Muni or Lord Shiva talking here. You know, you're talking three people who are very involved on the top level in family, money, and, you know, law and order, you know, or administration. So these are, you know, top level. You don't get bigger than this, right? So then, and they're talking this. So it works. Does that make sense? So that's why Bhagavatam is the highest, because it brings us out. Otherwise, we wouldn't know from other literatures that Kuvera has this kind of consciousness. We'll just take it that, you know, he sits here with the yakshas and takes care of the money. But from here we understand he's on that platform because he has this consciousness. Like that. That's what puts him on such as, you know, Lord Shiva's brother. Otherwise he wouldn't be, why would he be on that? You know, then he'd be sitting in Manhattan in a bank there, you know, like that, if his consciousness wasn't so high. Maybe Switzerland. No. Is that okay? Yes.
It was just an example came to my mind in a Rishi Sringa, and we didn't know those very nice brahmacharis were actually girls.
Oh, yes.
That's an example of not knowing.
Yes, not knowing, so he got, yeah. You know the story? So Rishi Sringa, because his father had a problem. You know, it kind of like Vishwamitra, right, with Menaka. So he also had a problem. So then he decided his son's going to grow up without knowing any women, without being involved. So they lived out in the forest and they never saw any. So then at one point when it was understood that his purity was so great that if he came and simply put his foot on the kingdom, which had had a drought for something like 12 years, then it would start to rain. So the king made arrangements how to get him there, because his father is very powerful. And so you don't want to mess with his father, because, you know, you don't want to be turned into a frog or a pile of ash or something, you know, like that. So then these Sikh society girls, they said, we'll take on the challenge, right? Because they understood he didn't know. The others were afraid he doesn't know women, so therefore his brahmacharya is so powerful that you can't mess with these guys. But their point was, is they don't know what women is, so we can go in there and, you know, our effects will have effect, but he won't know what's happened. Right? So they went dressed as brahmacharis, and, you know, we're all very nice and interactive, and, you know, discussing all yajnas and this and that, so that means even we see society girls, they knew this level of knowledge. And so then they got his mind attracted, and so then they said, hey, we're, you know, why don't you, know, we spent time in your ashram, so why don't you come spend time in ours? So they had prepared a boat that looked like an island ashram. And so they came out got on the island, and as soon as they're on, then all these people were rowing. I think it was underneath some hundreds of people. And so they spent the whole night talking, so in the morning, they're at the kingdom. And so then he gets out, and where is this place? So he steps off the boat onto the land, and as soon as he steps there, then it starts to rain. But now he got tricked because he didn't know, you know, how you say, just I'm trying to bring it back to the context of vidyam, avidyam, yeah, so whatever it is. So he didn't understand the full mechanical picture. So if, in other words, if one's absorbed in the consciousness level, the emotional level, it won't be as important. But if one is involved in the intellectual level, then it's important, right? Because like women, they may get into it or not, it doesn't matter, because for them it's the emotions of the material things or the emotions of spiritual things. So if they're in an environment of spiritual, then the emotions flow that way so that it's perfect. It's already working. They're already engaged. But the intellectual then means you're looking at the mechanics of the material existence, how to deal with it to get the most efficient result. So if in dealing with it you don't understand its that mechanics is functioning because of its connection to the Lord, then one will be entangled. Right? Because like if you ask that, you know, ask the guy, oh, you know, you don't, you know, we don't see the temple so much, never see you around, you know, like that, and you know, what, you know, so why, I'm being practical, right? You know, I got to take care of the family, make money, this and that. So practical means using the intelligence to manipulate material energy to get a specific result that you feel is important. So that means intelligence is there. That means they don't use the metaphysical; they're entangled. You know. Well, the woman will give a different answer. Oh, it's more comfortable, or, you know, just, you know, we just that needed that family interaction. So they'll give a different answer. So it's just a matter of just connecting those attachments to Krishna. It's done. So the metaphysical is especially important for the men, because of they are the ones that think by manipulating material energy, then I'll get the result. And then we falsely think, I've done devotional service, which is an activity. I'm doing activity now. So therefore, my activities are devotional service. Does that make sense? That's the logic that's being followed. I'm a devotee, I do activities for Krishna. I'm doing activities that I need to for my family, my material existence. So therefore, that endeavor is automatically devotional service. But without the metaphysical, how do you analyze if it is or not? It may be, but it may not be. So without knowing, these are the tools. Right? It means the guy, something's gone wrong with the car. What's the first thing he thinks? He wants some tools. If he doesn't have tools, he can't work. You know what I'm saying? The lady, she couldn't care less about tools. Call someone else to come fix it. You know what I'm saying? It's a relationship. You know? I don't know how to deal. They know how to deal. The man will think, no, I will. But you need tools. So these are the tools. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Is that okay? Is that it? Yes.
Conrad, it seems really important we engage this aspect, this metaphysical aspect, because I know godbrothers with us and still and not with us who went back to secular higher education because they were bored.
Yes, but there's nothing more fine than this. Secular education can't work on this level.
Yes, I know.
It just can't.
So we need to develop.
Yes. Yeah, but you can only develop something if you see the importance. If the importance is there immediately, then one endeavors for it. But one should endeavor for it not by the very means that it's trying to adjust. You know what I'm saying? It's just like one school of management. Or one school, like so-called management, let's put it this way, is let's say someone gets a position. So this school then, the first thing they do is have to establish an office. Right? That means then the office, they have to have their room, you know, then you have to have your table, you have to have the right chair, you know, you're not a young guy anymore, you know, you have to have all the this and that and so many other things and put all these things in place, but one hasn't managed anything yet. Of course, one was busy arranging that. And then after, you know, however much time it is, it all gets arranged. Much of the time I've seen they never actually, I've never seen anyone who works on that, I've never seen them actually get anywhere, at least here in Mayapur. Maybe in the West it works because it's a little quicker to set up, but here it takes so long to set up. By that time they burn out and they go away. But I've seen it, you know, how you say it? The next building upstairs. You know, the whole thing, they spent lakhs setting that up, never used. They did the same thing in Calcutta, never used. I've seen it again and again. Because there's the idea that that's going to do it. So now if we think, oh, now to do this we have to set up all these schools and this and that, and then all the endeavor goes into, you know, the facilities and money and this, they'll forget, they'll miss the whole point. No, every temple can do this. Because every temple has some senior devotees. Like that. And so all they have to do is sit down and start analyzing what Prabhupada's talking about. And yeah. So every temple should be an education center. Then you might have some that will specialize, that they can do some, you know, very much more like that. But every, you know, like, does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the whole point, is that, and then if that's the basis, then it also, others can take very much advantage of education. And it's just like, if it's very important to the parents, then the student takes the school seriously. But if the school is not taken seriously by the parents, the kid won't. You know, because the kid is basically a composite of the parents', you know, consciousness and association. So that foundation that they have is what you have to work with. Is that?
There's a lot of potential,
there's great potential. That's the thing, is that it could be, you know, one of the greatest communities, because you have the maximum amount of senior men and those who, and not even just senior by age, but senior by experience. Because the thing with devotional service, which is not also, can't be appreciated on the mundane platform of morality, is that whatever you've attained to on the devotional level never goes away, no matter what you do. It means if you offend Vaishnavas, it may go away. But if that's not the case, it's anything else, it never goes away. It means all you have to do is see when you have these big festivals and somebody somehow or another resurfaces after 10, 20 years, that same potency they had in lecturing or other things, it's still there. It doesn't go away. But we'll think, oh, they did this, so they're not a Brahmin, they're not a devotee, so that wipes it out. That's because we think that morality actually is substance. Right? So it's it's a better level of consciousness than anamoy, just self-centeredness. So it can create some social stability, but it's actually not enough. That's why anyone with this mentality to date has never been able to establish a social system within a spiritual society. Because without spiritual consciousness, which is the fifth level, the second level is not going to cut it. You know, it just won't. You can think all you want that it will. You know, the kid's done algebra, and so he goes, hey, I can apply for that job in quantum physics. What's the problem? It's all numbers, right? You know, but there's a difference in how the numbers are applied. So it's all good and bad. But good means it's connected to Krishna, how he wants it done. Bad means it's not connected to Krishna. The world thinks good and bad stands on its own. This activity is inherently good. This activity is inherently bad. Why is it inherently good unless it's unless Krishna likes it that way? Like stealing is inherently bad because Krishna doesn't like stealing. Otherwise, why would every living entity think that way? Right? So that's the point, is there's a oneness in how everyone thinks because of that, because they're all part of Krishna. They see it, it works. They don't see it, it won't work. You know. So that's the point. Prabhupada put all this energy into his books and his lectures and all that, because by studying it, one can gain this. And then one can make things work so much better. Because if devotees want to be materially professional, this is the only way to do it. Because the others, even you do it, it takes them a lifetime. I mean, the guy is the CEO of the company. How old is he? He's in his 60s. Maybe 50s if he's pretty good. Very rare, you know, less than that, unless they're in IT. So then, you know, what are you going to do? You want to wait till you're materially perfect at 65? And then like this, now you're connected to Krishna. It's like, how much longer are you going to last? You know what I'm saying? Do you really want to be doing that? So people are doing that because of their drive for position and power. But the devotee doesn't really have that drive because they're more intelligent. So past 50, it's hard to do that. So you see is people can have that drive to be successful just for themselves, just for their own family, because they don't want to go beyond that. Does that make sense? So This is the only way that it actually can work for devotees. You know, not that being materially successful is so important, but if it's there, it can be engaged. You know, and since it's fairly commonplace, considered standard, you know, that somebody's nicely situated because they're materially doing well, then why not go about it in an appropriate way for devotees to go about it? Like that. And then this is the only way you have both, because the material is the reflection of the spiritual. You know, so we want the shadow, but you know, we want to control the shadow, but you don't control the shadow by controlling the shadow. You control the shadow by controlling the origin. So that origin is Krishna. You control Krishna, then that goes there. But you can only control Krishna through devotion. So that's always the fun point. Okay, so we'll end here. Then continue some questions if anyone wants after 5 minutes. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandi.